Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. As you know, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor for tech-enabled services firms. Today, I have the pleasure of my partners attending along with me to talk about, I think, a very interesting topic. My partners, Matt and Ryan. Welcome, guys.
Good to be with you, Mike. Good to be with you. Happy fall, or soon to be fall, I guess. Interesting topic. And I think it's a super important one. We're sort of talking about the potentials for holdbacks as part of a transaction, and why it should be expected, and why it's important. Bit of a technical one, but Ryan, what's going on?
Yeah, I agree with you. This is one where, in some levels, we hope you never have to deal with, as it's a bit of an insurance policy or a bit of a holdback in a transaction. So today we're going to dig into a concept of reps and warrants, is what we'd call it, so representations and warranties. Essentially, this is something that's going to be drawn up by an M&A lawyer. So just to remind everyone that Revenue Rocket, we are not lawyers, although we deal with lawyerly related things every day. So, Mike, I'd love to get you to understand just a few definitions. So what is reps and warrants when we hear that term in context of a purchase agreement between buyers and sellers?
Yeah, let's just, lay the groundwork here. So if you're going to sell your firm or you're acquiring another firm, you've gotten to an agreement or a handshake agreement with a signed letter of intent, which generally talks broadly about the price and terms that are going to be paid for the business. And you've made it through, materially made it through due diligence at this point. Led and conducted by the buyer, and the seller has responded by providing all that information to their satisfaction. And the buyer is now going to produce a purchase agreement for the seller and seller's counsel to review. I should remind everyone that the purchase agreement is a legal binding agreement between the parties. The letter of intent is not. And so as you move into, the language in the purchase agreement, it is important that you get it right. And that is why you involve a competent M&A lawyer and an M&A advisor to make sure that the spirit and intent of the transaction is encased in the four corners of the document, as well as the legal appropriate items in the document. Part of those legally binding terms of the document are called reps and warrants, or representations and warranties. Both buyers and sellers make certain representations and warranties about their respective business to the other party so that they can be confident that, in the case of the buyer making representations and warranties, that they are legally organized, that they have the capacity to do the transaction, and that they are entering into the transaction in good faith. And likewise, the seller, and this is where we'll spend most of our time today, is representing and warranting the condition of the business and the financials of the business that is being sold. It's super important to understand that all of those representation and warranties, and there may be many, many pages of them, are accurate, both accurate and factual as made by the buyer, and very important that those are accurate and factual as made by the seller. You'll be asked to do a lot of things like, you've provided all the contracts, that you've not received notice of a termination, that your financials are accurate to the best of your knowledge. And generally, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but generally, a buyer will ask for some sort of surety commitment to make sure that those reps and warrants are factual. And that comes in the means of either a holdback of the purchase price for some period of time, or you will mutually decide to go get a reps and warranties insurance policy, which we can talk about both of those things more in a bit.
So if I understand that a little bit more, Mike, you're going to essentially, you're vouch for what's provided. If you're a seller, you're vouching that the information you provided is true and accurate. And because with that, the buyer can feel confident in what they're acquiring. So the assets are there, the contracts are there, the employment agreements, those are what they are. And if there's material changes between or as of the close date, there should not be any known entities kind of beyond the close date. Everything should be known at close. I think I heard that right. And then you just mentioned some kind of surety. Can you explain that a little bit more, Mike? It sounds like this is the concept of a holdback.
Right. So a holdback essentially has you put your money where your mouth is a bit, and provides the buyer with a remedy or a partial remedy should you be a bad actor as a seller, or should there be a situation where you misrepresented your reps and warrants. It's not atypical for there to be, 10% or so of the purchase price or upfront cash at a minimum to be held back for some period of time, usually 1 year, to confirm that there are no reps and warrants of violations once the buyer starts operating the business. And I can give you an example of one that could occur. One that could occur might be that you received notice as a seller from a client that they were going to terminate a contract, and you did not share that detail with the buyer before the close, and it was required in your reps and warrants to do so. And as such, the buyer would be harmed beyond what they would have expected, using sort of a reasonable person standard. And they would want a financial remedy for that. And so that's an example of one that kind of comes up from time to time. If you are a seller, I just want to really emphasize that you're fully transparent with everything you know about the business, and that transparency is in alignment with the reps and warrants you're making in the agreement. Because the lawyers will use this term, was it in the four corners of the document? Meaning, was it outlined in clear language in the agreement? Yes or no? And if the answer is yes, that you represented that no clients had given you a termination, yet some had, then you are in violation or breach of the purchase agreement. So it is critically important on reps and warrants that you spend time, a material amount of time, with your own lawyer going through each and every representation and warranty to make sure that they're fully factual and current. Now, a little nuance here, this wouldn't apply if, for example, you got notice 2 days after close, right? Because the reps and warrants you're making before close are what's important. So I think that, that's why you need to work closely with your lawyer. But when I say surety, I really mean that, there's either a holdback of some amount of money that'll get paid to you, provided there's no violations of reps and warrants, or, you can go through get an actual insurance policy from a third party that will provide a remedy to the buyer should there be a reps and warrants violation that would occur. You should know that deals have to be of a certain size to qualify for reps and warrants insurance, so not all deals do. And there is a very material amount of diligence that an insurance company, as you can imagine, will be doing on your business and the agreement to confirm that there is a low risk for any reps and warrants violation ahead of time. So sometimes it adds time in the transaction, in order to get that in place prior to the deal closing. Generally, if the diligence has been well organized on behalf of the buyer, it speeds things up. But if it has been somewhat poorly organized, you may not even be able to get a reps and warrants policy, or it may take an inordinate amount of time for an insurance company to write that policy. So that's something that's important to keep in mind as well. But it's really a way to protect the buyer from there being some sort of a seller breach of the reps and warrants. Now, I want to tell you that it's exceptionally rare that a seller will have a reps and warrants breach or any reps and warrants breach in a deal, unless the seller is a bad actor. Right? If the seller is a bad actor and is intentionally breaching the agreement in order to get it closed, knowing so, or, you know, either that or their lawyer didn't effectively, you know, bring them through what they were committing to in those reps and warrants, you know, then those sureties, you know, think of it like a surety bond, if you will, that hold back or that, that reps and warrants policy would come into play, of course. But generally, it's exceptionally rare. I can count on one hand the number of times in the last, you know, 23 years that we've seen any sort of reps and warrants violation. And you know, usually it was in the context of a seller being a bad actor and intentionally signing an agreement that they knew was inaccurate in order to close the deal.
Mike, I don't know if you want to get into this or not, but we had talked about kind of the absolute knowledge or kind of known of language that goes into that. It's hard to understand every bit of your business. So if you perhaps lost a customer but didn't know about it, I mean, you still may attest that it was a customer, but in reality, it wasn't. Are there protections from either buyer or seller to look in this language that can give some leeway or take away leeway?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that this is where the lawyers earn their money, right? They will negotiate whether there's what's called a knowledge provision that's pursuant to the reps and warrants portion of the agreement or not. And you have to decide with your lawyer and the, you know, the negotiation with counsel on the other side, whether or not it will be acceptable to make a sort of absolute declaration that, you know, for example, you've not received notice from a customer or that you, you know, certify the numbers to be either GAAP compliant or correct, or whether or not you will use what's called a knowledge qualifier. The knowledge qualifier says that essentially, to your knowledge, you don't know of any of these things. Now, in some cases, it doesn't matter because you have the knowledge anyway, so you can absolutely attest to the fact that that is the case. Depending on the size and complexity of your business, the specific portion of the reps and warrants that are applicable and your specific situation may dictate whether you're making an absolute declaration or a knowledge qualified declaration associated with those reps and warrants. And that would apply, obviously, to buyers and sellers. But I want to be clear that it could be different in every situation, and every buyer and seller could come to a different agreement here. And this is where the lawyers bring their expertise and knowledge to the table in the specific situation, and you should defer to your counsel on that.
Yeah, Mike, I was wondering, kind of in that gray area, and maybe, you know, so talk about, is it best to manage things that are in that gray area? Here's the history with this customer, but this new contract, you know, I'm feeling a little less bullish about, right? And he being open, obviously he's got a contract. Black and white would say that revenue is in the clear, but both the buyer and seller are wanting to make sure that they're on a sort of eyes wide open playing field with regards to the potential for that ongoing revenue. Is that better handled through a rep and warranty, or, you know, maybe handle some sort of an earnout structure?
Well, that's a great question, Matt. I would say that, you know, in many ways that is handled typically through some sort of earnout or gain share arrangement. So everyone has aligned interest around getting a new contract post-transaction in place. It would be very unlikely that a seller would warrant that they are, you know, they can only warrant what's going to occur up till the transaction, right? And it would be rare to negotiate a new contract prior to a transaction with a buyer. It just wouldn't. Now, it's pretty common to have a conversation with the largest clients of the seller ahead of a close. Once as a seller, you're confident the deal is going to close. So typically you've negotiated your agreement, you know, you're within a week or so of closing. You have a call or validation. The buyers have a call or validation call with the top clients to make sure they're happy and that they intend to move forward, and that, you know, a transaction alleviate any concerns they might have about the transaction, disrupting their contract with their existing provider or the seller. And I would say, you know, there's a lot of fear about that by sellers, but generally it's unwarranted because, you know, if those calls are handled properly, typically the clients will take a bit of a wait and see attitude. Hey, okay, you know, this is changing. We get it. There's consolidation in our industry. We're not going to do anything abruptly. We will see how this new buyer, you know, handles this moving forward. Now in that situation, you've already warranted that your contracts are effective and in place, and it's been further validated by, the buyer on these larger agreements. Let's see, the bigger clients. And so you're in compliance with your reps and warrants. Remember that what happens post-transaction is not the seller's responsibility as it relates to reps and warrants. It may be their responsibility financially, depending on how you've structured a gain share arrangement that incents everyone to put them on new paper or new contract. That's sort of a separate thing. But generally, we see that handled if that transfer to a new agreement, which does happen depending on the structure of the deal, whether it be an asset deal or a stock deal, as an example, that you're going to repaper those contracts and they happen post-transaction, and you typically align interests through an earnout, which would get the seller and the seller's team who has the relationship. It gives you an incentive to go to that client and help them understand kind of what's in it for them and the realignment of the contract. Even if the terms are the same, you know, you have to go through that contract negotiation. And whenever you do that, you run the risk that those contracts aren't going to be renewed or not signed. And it focuses everyone on doing the right thing, which is get the contract repapered and make sure that that client continues.
Yeah, it's a great distinction. It's a very similar question is in deal structures, you have something like a seller note. Well, that might be paid out a year or two after close. You have things like an earnout that may be paid out 6 months to 3 years out. And then you add another component that is kind of effectively delaying the money you get to close, which is holdback. And you kind of, there's a few of those that the holdback should really almost be treated as a guaranteed payment unless you have issues that you didn't disclose. So it is kind of a guaranteed payment, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a payment on that date. If you're a seller negotiating a deal, it seems like there could be some things you may want to negotiate on. So it sounds like the term of a contract for reps and warrants, the amount of that you're looking at for reps and warrants are variables here. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, and beyond the term and the amount, there's also a carrying cost associated with that because, you know, you're essentially loaning as a seller monies to the buyer to reduce their risk or fortify their risk to confirm that you're not a bad actor, right? And it's reasonable to ask for some sort of reasonable interest rate on that holdback because you don't have the money, right? Not yet, anyway. And so I would say it's pretty common to see a buyer provide an interest rate on the holdback. That's also an incentive for them to get that thing paid to you as quickly as reasonably and possible. We've actually seen people who are buyers pay out that holdback ahead of the agreed upon term in an effort to stop accruing interest once they've satisfied the fact that there are no violations of the reps and warrants. It's pretty hard to do that in less than 6 months, I would say. So typically those terms range from about 6 months on a holdback to 2 years, depending on the complexity of the business. And not uncommon to have an interest payment paid on that amount.
Okay, makes sense. What I heard today is that most sellers and buyers, you should really expect a rep and warrants provision in your purchase agreement. And you're really, what that is you're vouching for what's provided up to that date is true and correct and accurate. Buyers will typically ask for some kind of surety in reps and warrants. So really expect a holdback. And that holdback oftentimes could be approximately 10% of the cash in a deal and should last approximately a year. There's a distinction of before and after close. So reps and warrants are for pre-close activities and you're attesting to what you provide is true and correct to that close. That doesn't impact things that happen post-close. So if you lose a customer post-close, that's on to the buyer to really deal with. However, if you, let's say, have a customer that canceled and you knew about it but did not tell the buyer, that could be a reps and warrants issue. I heard that breaches are exceptionally rare in reps and warrants, but that holdback is a pool for really addressing those issues. So either pulling from that directly to compensate or change the deal or to even fund legal action if absolutely necessary. Is there anything I missed, Matt or Mike?
Great summary. Important topic. Where do we go from here, Mike?
Well, I think you covered it all, Ryan. Keep in mind that the most important component here is to be truthful and fully disclose, the nature of the business, and everything that you attest to in the agreement needs to be fully vetted with your lawyer. They'll help you think about all of those aspects of what you're attesting to, and why they're important and what the ramifications attesting to something that maybe a gray area or is not entirely known what the impact or risk might be to you. So as a seller. So with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. I encourage you to tune in next week when we'll unpack additional growth strategy and M&A topics for IT services firms, tech-enabled services firms. And make it a great week. Take care.